Good day from Wall Street. This is Juan Costello, senior analyst with the Wall Street Reporter. And joining us today is Colonel Tim Ringgold, CEO of Defense Solutions Holdings. Defense Solutions Holdings trades on the OTC bulletin board. The ticker symbol is DFSH, and the company is an international project management, executive consulting, and business development firm. Thanks for joining us today, Colonel Ringgold.
Good morning, Juan. It's a great pleasure to be here, and I'd like all your listeners to know it's another beautiful day in downtown Baghdad. The temperature's in the high 70s. There's not a cloud in the sky, and so far, no car bombs today.
Well, that's certainly good to hear. And talk a little bit, start out by talking a little bit about the BTR-4 and the company you joining the producing team in NATO.
Terrific. Again, thank you, Juan. The BTR-4 is a project that we just joined. It's a armored combat vehicle that comes from a long line of vehicles. BTRs have been around for about 50 years as an eight-wheeled fighting vehicle. But for the first time, one is going to be made that's NATO-compatible and NATO-interoperable. And Defense Solutions has the role in the venture of supplying all of the American technologies to make this this world-class fighting vehicle into, again, a NATO-compatible, NATO-interoperable fighting vehicle. So Defense Solutions will be supplying the engine, the transmission, the driver vision equipment, the communications equipment, and all of the electro-optics that go into the turret and the weapons platform. So American companies get to supply about 40% of the cost of the vehicle as it goes on the market, again, as NATO compatible. Unique in that we're going to be the lowest cost, but essentially the highest capability vehicle in this fleet. And so new NATO member nations, for those countries that are doing United Nations peacekeeping operations, will find this vehicle especially attractive. And as I mentioned to you, I'm here in Baghdad, where we have a headquarters, and the Iraqis have great need of this vehicle and have expressed interest in it. So I'm here to talk to them about it.
Great. And talk a little bit about the significance of the budget for the Iraqi parliament that they passed earlier in the month.
Well, as you can appreciate, oil prices have fluctuated all over the board in the last year. And the Iraqi government's primary source of income is oil revenue. So when oil revenue is high, the Iraqi budget is big. And when it's small, they have to make deep, deep cuts. Well, with the falling oil prices, the Iraqi budget has gone through a number of iterations, where it's been cut down from $80 billion a year to $58.6 billion currently, again, just based on the falling price of oil. I've seen figures that range between 92 and 95% of the Iraqi budget comes from oil. Now, what this means for us is that there is a relatively limited defense budget this year. They've just got a couple billion dollars to spend, which still sounds like an awful lot of money to me, but the needs here are rather significant. But what's important as far as timing is that the Iraqi budget is calendar year, and so they stopped spending in the first part of November last year.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the last part?
Yeah, they've had trouble because the budget, they stopped spending on the budget in November of last year, and now it took them so long to pass a new budget that essentially there's been 5 months here that the Iraqis have not been able to issue contracts. And so there's this huge pent-up demand for the government. Now that the budget is just being released this week, we expect just an avalanche of requirements coming out. And again, we're here on the ground expecting to benefit from receiving many of those solicitations, tenders, and opportunities to go to contract.
And continue talking about some of the trends in the market, and how well positioned is Defense Solutions to capitalize on them.
Well, we're on this next question because Iraq has been relatively unscathed by the world economic crisis, other than the fall in price of oil. The rest of the problems that nations are experiencing, with high unemployment and excess capacity in their production, has just not affected Iraq. And so Iraq still has about a $30 billion surplus from last year that has not been spent, and they still have the world's second largest proven reserves of oil. So they've got money, and they've got tremendous requirements for virtually everything in the market, and then the fact that they've been relatively unscathed by the world economic crisis, I think bodes well for Defense Solutions with our two offices here in downtown Baghdad and our Iraqi staff and our American staff. I think we're just extremely well positioned to capitalize on the opportunities that are here.
And what differentiates the company from other players in the sector?
Well, there's a couple ways of looking at that. There are many American companies in Iraq, but those companies are here primarily on U.S. government contracts. Defense Solutions is virtually unique in that 2005 we started contracting directly with the government of Iraq. I'm not much of a crystal ball reader, Juan, but I thought in 2005 that the United States forces were not going to stay in Iraq for a long time. I didn't think that we had stomach to stay in Iraq for year after year after year. So I made a decision at that time that we wanted to stay in Iraq, and therefore we needed to get close to the ultimate customer, which is the Iraqi government, the Iraqi people. So we have not aggressively sought U.S. government contracts. What we've sought is to build relationship with the Iraqi customer, the Iraqi government. And as you know, U.S. forces are going home. And so those days of multi-billion-dollar indefinite-term U.S. government contracts, that period is over. And the contracts that exist now are going to be wrapped up. And in the future, those contracts are going to be issued by the Iraqi government and only to companies that are licensed to operate in Iraq, which, by the way, Defense Solutions is licensed to operate in Iraq. So I think we're extremely well positioned. Iraq is going home. All those contracts are going with them. The new customer is the government of Iraq, and you got to be licensed to operate here.
Certainly. And talk to us a little bit about the company's growth. Is it primarily organic, or are you looking towards M&A opportunities as a catalyst towards continued growth?
We're certainly looking to acquire other small companies. Some of that is predicated on the success we anticipate here in Iraq. Some of our contracts that we're chasing are very, very substantial, and they require a great number of coalition partners to pull this off. For example, we have a program to supply, a proposal to supply, I should say, main battle tanks to the Army of Iraq. To this day, Defense Solutions is the only company that has delivered main battle tanks to the Army of Iraq since the fall of Saddam Hussein. And we started that work in 2005. Iraq needs about 2,000 main battle tanks. That is a monumental undertaking for the world's largest defense contractor. And we're far from the largest. I mean, we're still very much on the small size. But we're the project managers. We're the guys who have put the coalition of companies and countries together, the suppliers together, and integrated the Western and the Eastern technologies so that we have American-compatible equipment that the Iraqis can use that is extremely cost-competitive. but still, Juan, these programs will employ thousands of people and require, you know, many, many partners to pull this off. So the question for us at that time will be, do we just subcontract? Do we acquire other companies, partners? Just how do we execute the mammoth contracts that we expect in the future? And a part of that, of course, will depend on exactly what our customer, the government of Iraq, decides that they want in the makeup and the configuration of their force as we go forward.
Good answer. And can you walk us through, Colonel Ringgold, your background and experience as well as that of some of your key management team at Defense Solutions?
Oh, absolutely. Juan, if you'd, you and your listeners don't pay attention to anything else, our management team, I think, is absolutely superb. And myself, I served 30 years in the United States Army. I retired in the grade of colonel. I commanded troops through the brigade level, which meant I had over 4,000 combat troops under my command. I worked on Capitol Hill. I worked in the Pentagon. I even had a small period of time where I worked at the White House. I'm the principal author of the White House study on critical infrastructure protection, which I wrote in the fall of 2001 and spring of 2002 as an interagency project at the White House. So good experience there. Our president and chief operating officer is a fellow West Point graduate and career infantry officer, airborne ranger, by the name of John Little. John taught at West Point a couple times after graduating from there. Again, he's our president and chief operating officer. I've got former Congressman Kurt Eldon as our chief strategic officer. Kurt was the vice chairman of the House Armed Services Committee when he retired, and also the vice chairman of the Homeland Security Committee. So as far as someone who knows the strategic direction of the armed forces and the inner workings of the legislative process, the funding process for the, I would argue that there are a few that are better than 20-year Congressman Kurt Weldon. My personal favorite is a senior consultant to my firm is Ambassador Stephen Menekes. Ambassador Menekes came to the United States after World War II, having been born in Berlin on the eve of World War II, lived in Berlin all through World War II. As a young man, attended Cornell and Yale Law School, became general counsel to the Department of the Navy, was the vice chairman of the Ex-Im Bank, and later United States ambassador to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And just a class act from beginning to end. I can go on and on. We've got other folks of equal caliber. We've got generals. We've got admirals. Lots of common soldiers and army guys and soldiers like me who like to get dirty and roll around in the mud and talk to soldiers and work to get them the best equipment and training. So very, very proud of our management team.
Well, it certainly does sound like you have a great team. And can you talk to us about some of the objectives that you and the rest of the management have set for the company in the next coming 12 to 24 months?
Well, Juan, we're obsessively focused on Iraq. I've been working here for a number of years, and now that we have a firm timeline, firm commitment for the withdrawal of U.S. forces, we realize that the time is escaping quickly before Iraq will have to take over from U.S. forces. Just this summer, over the next 3 months, U.S. forces are to come off of patrol and be stationed at their forward operating bases, and the Iraqi army is expected to take over on those combat patrols. And frankly, the Iraqi army, where it's much, much better than it has been at any time in its recent history, it still needs significant amount of equipment and training. And so our focus right now is to land those contracts to supply that equipment, that training, that maintenance, those spare parts, so that the Iraqi Army can assume the responsibility from the American forces so the American forces can go home. And I'll be happy to get into detail on what some of those projects are, but we're talking about rebuilding and re-equipping an army that in 2003 had 9,000 armored combat vehicles and today has less than 1,000. So the quantity of equipment needed, the quantity of training is just incomprehensible.
That certainly sounds like that. And so, yeah, talk to us a little bit about the project. You don't have to get too specific. Just, you know, give us a little overview.
Well, I'll take the first one. In fact, I'll do three of them real quick. T-91 is our main battle tank. We take the hull from an Eastern European main battle tank, hulls that were left over by the thousands at the end of the Cold War, and we take them from rebuild them from bare metal up with all new parts, all new American technologies to produce a main battle tank in the same class as the U.S. Abrams main battle tank. It has essentially the same caliber gun, the same combat capability, but it's a third the cost. And the life cycle cost is equally reduced from that of the Abrams. And the fact that the Iraqis need approximately 2,000 main battle tanks, few countries in the world can afford Abrams. The American Army struggles to afford that quantity of Abrams. It's always a multi-decade procurement to replace the tank. So we're in here as the only viable alternative to Abrams should the Iraqis choose the T-91. The next program we're working is mortars. The United States Army has a standard 120-millimeter mortar that is made in Louisiana under license agreement. It's the only place else in the world that that mortar system is available is Kazakhstan. And we recently completed an agreement to have all of the supply for Kazakhstan available to us for Iraq, should Iraq choose this. So it is the U.S. Army system, but it's made in Kazakhstan only because the license agreement in Louisiana only allows it to be made in the U.S. military. So we can supply the U.S. standard equipment, frankly, at a lower cost than the U.S. Army buys it. And Iraq needs about 800 of those systems total, and they run a little over $500,000 apiece. And then we also have the BTR-4, which we talked about, which is an armored personnel carrier. The Army of Iraq needs between 1,200 and 2,000 of them, depending on whether they also acquire the ambulances and the maintenance vehicles and the ammo carriers and all the other different variations. And the BTR-4 runs between $1.5 million and $2 million apiece. Again, depending on how it's configured. So all of these can become very, very substantial multi-year contracts. On a point on this, and I just described three pieces of very heavy equipment, main combat type gear. When an army buys a tank, they have it for 30 or 40 years. The T-72s that the Army of Iraq has today are 1970s technology. They've had those tanks or tanks like them for better than 30 years, 40 years in some case, and they're going to have them for another 20 or 30 years. So these are significant long-term decisions, and if we can just be successful with a small piece of these, we'll be here for decades supplying this equipment, the spare parts, the training, and the maintenance to support the soldiers of the Army of Iraq.
Great. And let's shift the focus a little bit. Do you think that investors understand the general direction the company is headed in?
I believe so. We've certainly been trying to get the word out. Investors don't always understand the nuances of the difference between a tank and an artillery piece, or what a combat vehicle versus a tactical vehicle. But that's not important. I mean, that's just semantics within my business. What's important for an investor is to know that there are some significant long-term opportunities here. I'm absolutely confident we're not going to win them all. We may only win a small portion. But how many multi-billion dollar contracts do you have to win to be successful? I mean, obviously not very many. And where I certainly can't guarantee that we're going to win anything. I can tell you that I don't run into any other Americans over here doing what I'm doing promote American technologies the way we are, and that the Iraqis are very, very interested in acquiring American technology. So I think we're properly positioned. I think we'll be ultimately very successful.
And once again, joining us today is Colonel Tim Ringgold, CEO of Defense Solutions Holdings, trades on the OTC Bulletin Board. The ticker symbol is DFSH. And before we conclude, Colonel Ringgold, what are some of the other key reasons why investors should consider Defense Solutions Holdings as a good long-term investment opportunity?
Well, certainly the strength of our management team, the strength of our business plan, and the strength of our connections with our suppliers. I didn't mention to you, but I think it's important to note that, for example, to do our T-91 project, we've actually entered into agreements with a number of countries, not companies, countries, because in Europe, the defense companies are owned by the government. So when you contract with them, you're entering into agreements with the government, and it's backed by the full faith and credit of that government. So it's all about the leadership, the management, strength of the management team, and it's the strength of the partnerships you put together in order to deliver. And the last point I'd like to make is, and I've made it several times, I'm here in Baghdad. I'm the chief executive officer of the company. I don't have a sales manager over here trying to promote our program. I think it's important enough that I'm here myself. Of course, I have a staff here and got some great folks working for me. But when I sit down with the customer, the government of Iraq, yeah, I'm the chief executive officer. I'm the decision maker, and I'm here sharing the same risks with them, and they appreciate that. And they appreciate that they're dealing with the decision maker, and I think it bodes well for us to get the positive response that we need in order to go to contract to start delivering this large items of equipment and rebuilding the Army of Iraq. And then again, with the objective so America could go home, but Defense Solutions is staying.
Well, it certainly sounds like you're rolling up your sleeves. And I'd like to thank you for taking the time to update our investors. We certainly look forward to continuing to track the company's growth and progress.
Well, thank you very much, Juan. It's been my pleasure speaking with you.
Great. Thanks.